Welcome to Shattering Myths, a program devoted to the most important and fastest growing segment of society. To those who, like myself and like IQ Al-Rasuli, who will be our guest during the next hour, who've come to realize that the world's political, religious, military, and economic institutions are corrupt, that they are counterproductive, that the world is being run by nincompoops, and that none of these institutions can be fixed. Our mission, therefore, is to know who is working against our interests, to expose them, to understand how and why they are doing so. Because ultimately, condemning such schemes, particularly religious and political schemes, it isn't hateful. It's the most caring thing we can do. In our concluding hour today, we're going to use evidence and reason to continue to explore Yahweh's prophetic prophecy, because he had a lot to say about the war that is currently being conducted in Syria, how that war is going to lead to the dismemberment of Israel and ultimately into an onslaught where over 150 million Muslims flood into Israel trying to destroy the country. But also in that prophecy, we find the United States behaving exactly as Yahweh predicted we would. Arrogant, stupidly, militaristically. It is all a very sad scene. IQ, welcome.
Thank you for having me, sir.
Yeah, my pleasure. I'd like to begin today where we have been in the last two or three times that we have been together. And this may sound for some like a rut, but it may be the single most important rut that we can share. And that is the treatment of women by Muslims. The lead story today from Fox News is young Christian women are facing greater risk of being kidnapped by Muslims, tortured, and even forced to convert to Islam since the Arab Spring ended in 2011. Now, why do you suppose that Christian women are at greater threat, being forced to convert to Islam, being tortured, and being kidnapped since the so-called Arab Spring?
Because Arab Spring wanted to reinstate Sharia, and they are actually doing it. In many Muslim states now, Sharia is the norm. And for those people who don't understand what Sharia is the most despicable, hate-mongering, war-mongering, misogynist, racist, illogical, intolerant belief system the world has ever known.
So let me see if I can get you. Let me just get you a quick point here. What you're saying is that the Arab Springs had nothing to do with a quest for freedom and democracy, but instead, since Sharia is the most fundamentalist aspect of Islam, the most conservative application of Islam, that it was exactly the opposite, that the Arab Spring was really an Islamic reformation.
That's exactly what it was. Whether people who started it, who were secular mostly, wanted this is immaterial, because what happens in reality in the Muslim world, it is not the people who want freedom that win. It is the people who want to install Sharia that win. And that is exactly what's happening. Besides, a Christian woman is not even just a woman. She's not even a second-class citizen. She's a fourth-class citizen, because she's considered as a beast, an animal, who has the choice to convert, to subjugate to Islam, or to be slaughtered. And they do all three of them.
And Islam's Quran not only says that it is appropriate for Muslims to rape their captives. So if a Christian woman was taken captive, was kidnapped by Muslims, the Quran explicitly says that sex with your slaves is appropriate. But this is the example that Muhammad himself set. So you cannot argue against kidnap and rape in Islam without insulting Muhammad.
That is exactly why the followers of Muhammad are clones of Muhammad. They are psychopathological clones of Muhammad. They can't help it. They're following Sharia, and Sharia, as you said, and I said, based mostly on Sunnah and Quran, and both of them are vile, so there is no problem.
Yeah, in fact, is there any aspect of Sharia that doesn't come from the Sunnah, which is the example of Muhammad, which is chronicled in only one place, which is in the Hadith, which was, best of my estimation, is responsible for between 95 and 97% of Sharia comes from the Hadith, depicting Muhammad's words and deeds, and about 3% comes from the Quran. I don't think there is any other source for Sharia, is there?
There isn't, no. Not as far as the resources of Islam are concerned.
So Sharia law is based entirely on Muhammad's example. So if we're trying to understand why Christian women are at a grotesquely higher rate of being subjected to kidnap, torture, and forced conversion to Islam, if we want to understand why, we have to realize first that the Arab Spring was not about democratic freedom. It was all about the imposition of fundamentalist Islam. And that Sharia, fundamentalist Islam, is directly related to Muhammad's behavior. So then all we really have to do is come to understand what Muhammad did relative to women, what he said relative to women, and we have finished the equation. We know now why Christian women are being treated as sex objects to be kidnapped, tortured, and forced into conversion.
By the way, just in case some Americans don't understand, it's not only Christian women. Any woman who is not even a Muslim, she could be a Hindu, she could be a Jew, she could be a Buddhist, it's immaterial. All of them are subject to this, but there are no Buddhists and Hindus in the Middle East. But they were Christians. They are the original people of Egypt. They are the original people of the Middle East, by the way. Mm-hmm. They are indigenous people. And they are being exterminated, as we speak, by the non-indigenous people, the Arabs.
Okay, there's a point that you made here that I have a difference on. And when I share my difference, though, you'll probably say that we really don't have any difference at all. You have said that you don't have to be a Christian to be kidnapped and raped by Muslims, and that they will kidnap and rape any non-Muslim, whether they're Christian or any native people. And what I would say is that it's actually Muslims that are kidnapped and raped by Muslims more frequently than it is Christians and non-Muslims who are abused by Muslims. And the proof of that is that the two surveys that have been taken in Egypt over the last 5 years, most comprehensive evaluations, 99.7% of Muslim women in Egypt have claimed that they have been sexually abused. So
I'm not disagreeing.
It's universal.
We always end up agreeing. But the point is, the discrimination specifically is against non-Muslim females.
Right. They are. In fact, let me give you a citation that I put in Prophet of Doom. The highest ranking official cleric, imam, in Saudi Arabia, out of Mecca, when speaking of the treatment that Muslim jihadists should perpetrate on Jews, is that he said that Allah made their women available for you to rape. You should rape them. It's the highest authority in Saudi Arabia on Islam.
Yeah, but he's not the only one. The highest authority from Al-Azhar did the same thing. The highest authority from Jerusalem, the Muslim clerics, the Muslim clerics in so-called Palestinian territory, they do the same. They say the same. Not only just the Jews. The Christians specifically now are targeted because they are the only minority left among the Muslim world in the Arab countries. That's why.
And IQ, the reason they say that is forced leave. Right. They're not saying that because it's their opinion. They're saying that when they say that Allah made the Jewish women available for Muslim men to rape and that they should rape them, they're actually telling the jihadists exactly what the Quran says. The Quran authorizes kidnap. And then the Quran tells Muslim men that Allah has authorized them to rape their captives.
But furthermore, as we said, Muhammad Sunnah did exactly the same thing. He did it with Safiya, he did it with Jawahiriya, and these are the only some of the few names that we know about. We don't know about the hundreds more that they were mentioned.
We have three women, all happen to be Jewish women, that Muhammad, all three were married. All three had their husbands and their fathers killed by Muhammad's goons. And in all three cases, Muhammad picked first as to what woman he would rape. And the depictions of his actions in the Islamic Hadith, which is the source of Sharia law, have Muhammad raping these women and raping them over and over and over again.
By the way, he was raping them contrary to the instruction that he gave in the Quran, by the way.
Yes.
The three-month period and other periods, he broke these instructions that he himself imposed upon his followers.
Yeah, well, one of the examples is that Muhammad imposed a maximum of four wives for his followers, but for himself, countless wives, and he had his Quran say that, you know, you're a special case, Muhammad, so we won't put that restriction on you, because he had as many as 24 women as part of his harem at any one time.
Considering the fact that the Quran was Muhammad's authorship, of course, he gave himself all the pleasure.
Yeah. When he had sex with his adopted son's wife, which in most cultures, adoption is considered the same as being an actual son, had his God say, hey, but you know, adopted sons don't count, and so it's okay for Muhammad to have raped his son's wife. It's okay for Muhammad to even participate in incest.
But in fact, Muhammad created that verse, which overruled centuries of Arab tradition.
Of course.
One single verse.
Right.
Just to satisfy his lust for Zainab.
Correct. Correct.
He changed the history of Arabia.
Right.
You can't adopt children.
Right. That's correct.
You cannot adopt children.
Correct. Yeah, something that the civilized world had figured out, that adoption is a very good thing. In fact, the Torah speaks specifically about adoption and how good adoption is, and encourages adoption, and speaks of adoption with the exact same status as a naturally born child, with the full inheritance. And Muhammad, so that he could satiate his covetousness and lust, he ended the benefit. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We're talking with IQ Al-Rasulik, and we've got on the subject of what is happening in Egypt that is causing this catastrophic increase in the number of Christian girls who are being tortured. And we will return to that story in a moment. But IQ, you went to a place that is very important for our listeners to understand, that there had been civilized traditions in Arabia regarding adoption for centuries, and then Muhammad, to satiate his own desire to have sex with his son's wife, changed all of that. There's another change that Muhammad brought, and I think we've talked about this before. Prior to Muhammad and Islam, women had freedom, power, prosperity, independence in Arabia, and then after Muhammad's Islam, they lost all of that.
Correct, 100%. I would like our listeners to, I'm going to recite part of Winston Churchill's book, The River War, about the war in the Sudan, written over 110 years ago, about exactly what you're talking about. It says that the fact that in Muhammadan law, every woman must belong to some man as his absolute property, either as a child, a wife, or a concubine, must delay the final extinction of slavery until the faith of Islam has ceased to be a great power among men. 110 years ago, he knew exactly what should be done.
Wow. You know, that's stunning that what he did there. There's parts of Churchill that I like and parts that I'm not crazy about. But in terms of being able to assess and articulate an important perspective. He was among the great thinkers and orators of our time. What he said is that you can't deal with slavery until you first deal with Islam. You can't deal with women's rights and any sense of freedom for women until you first deal with Islam. And what he is saying is precisely what you and I have been saying for years, that Islam has to be eradicated for women to have hope, for societies to be civil, for there to be a cessation in terrorism, for there to be prosperity around the world. Islam has to be eliminated.
And he said it in one sentence. By the way, he added, which is very interesting, he says, no stronger retrograde force exists in the world as far as Muhammadan Islam is concerned. Far from being moribund, Muhammadan Islam is a militant and proselytizing faith. It has already spread throughout Central Africa, raising fearless warriors at every step. And would it not that Christianity is sheltered in the strong arm of science, the science against which it has vainly struggled, the civilization of modern Europe might fall as fell the civilization of ancient Rome. Again, he was prescient. We in the West are failing in confronting Islam by being politically correct.
Yeah, he's right. And I want to reemphasize the conclusion of all this. There, so long as Islam is tolerated, the world will be terrorized by Muslims. They're responsible for 99% of the world's terrorist acts. So long as Islam is tolerated, most of the world will live in abject poverty. So long as Islam is tolerated, every Islamic woman, which would be about 750 million of them, are going to be raped. They're going to be treated like animals. They're going to be tortured. So long as Islam exists, it's impossible to have prosperity, impossible to have a cessation of terrorism, impossible to have liberty for women. Impossible. It cannot be achieved so long as Islam exists.
With all due respect, not only for women. Under Islam, not even a blade of grass can grow. Under Sharia, not even a blade of grass can grow. Nothing will prosper under Islam. Nothing did prosper under Islam. And when some idiot tells me, yes, but the golden age, there was never a golden age. There were periods of time.
Oh, there was.
Of Islam were tolerant.
Yeah, no, there
was
no,
never a golden age.
Okay, first of all, let's deal with both. A golden age. I think the first 100 years of Islam, which is called its golden age, existed, but it existed for a reason that is entirely different than is presupposed by that term. In the first 100 years after Muhammad's death, the first war was the war of compulsion that forced every Arabian to either submit to Islam or die. And following that time, the weakened Persian Empire was conquered, as was most of the Middle East, as was most of Northern Africa, as was Southeastern Europe. And Muslims didn't just conquer those countries. They pillaged and raped them. That's where the gold came from. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. Having a conversation with IQ Al Rasuli, we've found another area of disagreement, which my guess is we're going to find that our positions are in perfect harmony. IQ said there was never a golden age for Islam, and I challenged that and said, oh, there was a golden age. It's just that it didn't exist in the way that most people interpret that term, that Mohammedan Muslims in the first 100 years of their existence after Muhammad created his horrid religion became the world's most ruthless barbarians, and they ravaged much of the world. They stole plunder, and they raped their way, murdering their way, to the point where Damascus, which is where they moved their capital, was overflowing with gold. They were fabulously rich. They hadn't produced anything of value. It's kind of like the golden age of piracy. It's a shame on them, not a credit to them. What do you think, IQ?
Well, it's a shame on our leaders from the academia who propagate this lie, willfully and knowingly propagate this lie, teaching new generations of our children of something which is really abhorrent, not true, not real.
So all of the, would you agree that the only reason that Islam was fabulously wealthy for 100 years is because all of that wealth was stolen?
Yada, you and I, we never disagree, because we are reading exactly the same scripture from exactly the same point. We might disagree in the interpretation of a slight item, like you said, 100 years of plunder in gold. I agree. They never produced anything. By the way, I have several chapters in my, in the name of Allah.org, 760 chapters, which describe how that the greatest thinkers in Islam or under Islam were mostly Jews who converted to Islam, or Jews, Christians, right. Christians who converted to Islam,
or Hindus,
Indians and right. Persians. Very few of them were Arab, not yeah. for another 150 years after Muhammad was dead.
Correct. Yeah, almost. But all the things that are really attributed to them, the numeral zero and algebra, for example, both of those two came from Indian Hindus that were slaves, you know, that were had been enslaved. The numbers vary depending on the source, but the most credible resources seem to think that between 250 million and 300 million people were killed, with about twice that number being raped in the first 100 years of Islam.
There's no doubt about it. In Africa alone under Islam, 140 million Africans were exterminated. In India, over 110 million. In fact, the mountain range called the Hindu Kush, it means the slaughter of the Hindus. If anybody doesn't believe me, Google it. Slaughter of the Hindus. The gypsies were originally from India, who escaped to Europe because of the slaughter.
Another great example is that in the fez hat that is worn by Shriners, which is when you get to the Shriner level of Freemasonry, it is becomes pure Islam. I mean, every symbol for the Shriners is Islamic. Their red hats, their fez hats, are red because when the Muslims went into Morocco, they killed so many people that the streets became rivers of blood. And as a sign of their great victory, the Muslims would take their turbans and they would dip them into the blood and put them back on their head, which came, which produced this red hat, blood red hat. Of Islam.
Nothing changes. In
Islam,
nothing changes. They can't. Why? They're reading exactly the same scripture that Muhammad bequeathed to them 1400 years ago. They are stuck in the time warp of Muhammad's 7th century Arabia. They will never get out of it. But tragically, they're bringing us down to their level, with the connivance of our leaders.
Yeah, that is the saddest part of it all, is that they haven't changed. It's extraordinarily easy to predict what Islam is going to do, what it has done, what it's all about, and yet no one seems to want to hold them accountable. It's interesting. Here's a statement that Yahweh makes. It's in Isaiah, the 17th chapter, which is really Yashaya. He said, So, be wary of a great many nations, roaring like hordes of agitated terrorists. These multitude of confused and loud-mouthed militants flaunting what they possess, similar to the chaotic uproar of loudly snarling and growling seas. They will wail in agitated and anguished screams, and the roar of the societal chaos of the people of these nations will be like the horrible uproar of floodwaters. Intensely and in great numbers, with grating passion, they will continually strive to desolate and lay waste. Now, Yahweh is talking about the invasion of Israel by tens of millions of Muslims is going to come right after Israel is forced to give up the West Bank and becomes vulnerable. He goes on to say, this massive number of men who gather together will be like the terrible chaos and riotous roar of floodwaters, massively great, widespread, and abundant, shall be their desire to destroy everything, giddy in the process as they crash into the land like a raging storm. But I will rebuke them. I will issue a warning against them while criticizing their corruption. And so they will be forced to flee, taking flight as a result of being driven back, ultimately ceasing to exist on account of being alienated. They will be chased, pursued, and driven away, similar to the chaff that dries up and is discarded on the hills before the approaching presence of the Spirit. They will be blown away like chariot wheels of a troop transport, rolling like tumbleweeds before the approaching presence of the storm. Approaching this point in time of the darkness of the Arab sunset, then behold, terrorism. Deliberate and dreadful mauling and murder of civilians to promote a political and religious objective. In the time before the dawn, it will be over, and for naught. This is the fate of those who are deceived regarding their merits. The results of flattering propaganda, the reward for those coveting booty, who engage in a military conquest to plunder and pillage us, and the lot in recompense and retribution coming to those who seek to conquer us, carrying us away as if we were spoils of war. Now, you quoted Churchill 100 years ago. This is Yahweh, happens to be God. He issued this statement in 750 BCE, 2,700 years ago. Think he got it right?
I think he's got it right, yes. The writing is on the wall for those who can read. But not many people can read, unfortunately.
So God,
who can read,
God is saying, I'm not buying it. Yeah. Right, this is God. He's saying, here's the nature of Muslims. Vicious, loud-mouthed, arrogant, deceived, covetousness, trying to steal and conquer what isn't theirs. He says, I'm not going to tolerate them. I'm going to blow them away. This is their just reward.
I hope he does it very quickly and very soon.
Yeah, what he says he's going to do here, the timing of this is interesting, IQ. It's part of a prolonged prophecy. Yahweh begins in the first statement in the 17th chapter of Yeshaya, saying that Damascus will ultimately become a twisted heap of ruins. And then he says, Which it's in the process of becoming. But he says that ultimately the Damascus government, the Syrian government, he says, is going to fall. And the only way for it to fall, IQ, is for the United States to continue to provide ever more sophisticated weapons to the Sunni Mujahideen. But he says that the government of Damascus will ultimately fall. Then he says when the government of Damascus falls, that the kind of terrorism that's going to emerge out of that region with Syria no longer being the place where jihadists can demonstrate their rage, that they're going to turn on Israel, and they're going to go back to their various countries, just like happened after the Great Jihad in Afghanistan. And the 10 years after that Great Jihad ended, we had the world's worst examples of terrorism around the globe. And so God is predicting that once the Syrian war ends and the defeat of the Syrian government, that these jihadists are going to become so savage around the world that Israel is going to be sacrificed to appease them, and that Israel will be narrowed at its waist in the West Bank so that it is only about 5 miles wide. And immediately after that, Muslims by the tens of millions are going to flood into the land and do exactly what I just read. So that's the timing.
Very ominous.
Yeah. It's not only ominous, it's like reading today's and tomorrow's newspaper. And so this particular war will occur. This will be the final attack of Muslims at large as an integrated community. A low-tech war, by the way. They're flooding into the land as individual terrorists. So it's going to be a very low-tech war. But there'll be so many Muslims that Yahweh says that that Israel's defensive forces will be unable to stop them. There won't be enough bullets to stop this flood
of
Muslims.
Like locusts.
Like locusts. Exactly like locusts. He says there'll be so many of them flooding into the land, crashing into the land, that Israel will be unable to stop them. So this time, Yahweh is saying, I have to intervene. And I have to blow them away to save the promised land. Otherwise, I would be reneging on the promises I made to Abraham. So he specifically intervenes.
Well, we have to wait and see.
Well, you know, so far, IQ, you know how many of his predictions he's gotten wrong?
Not as far as I know, any.
None. Now, there's a real difference between Yahweh and Allah. Allah never got a single prediction right. Yahweh's never gotten one wrong.
Well, because Allah is not God.
That is true. The interesting thing, IQ, about this, and when you and I have had a conversation many times about this, the arrogance of the United States and the United States thinking that it can impose its will on the world, is that immediately after what I just read to you, God begins to condemn the United States. He calls out the United States and says, I know who you are. I know what you're doing. And he talks about our arrogant speech, our aggressive military presence around the world. And he says, I'm not buying it. I am disgusted with you. And so the United States plays a major role on the wrong side.
Well, still playing a major role on the wrong side, under Obama especially.
Yeah.
Under Obama especially, I mean, his support of Islam is unequivocal.
Mm-hmm.
It is perfectly clear. I mean, what I can't figure out is you have a Congress, you have a people in America who are still willing to accept Obama's words as a truthful person.
You know, my problem with that, IQ, is that it's not that just Obama is a pathological liar and that his every deed is against the best interest of Americans. I don't think it's just the problem of the others in Congress accepting that. I think all the others in Congress are equally as bad. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. It is God's opinion. I wouldn't call it an opinion since he's God. It's God's conclusion. It was Winston Churchill's conclusion. It is my conclusion, and we're going to hear in a moment if it is also IQ Al-Rasuli's conclusion, that for the world to survive, we must come to recognize that Islam must be eliminated if we wish to see a diminishment of terrorism, an end to war, an end to global poverty, and an end to the mistreatment of women, including torture and rape. That the only way that those goals can be advanced is to eliminate Islam. What do you think, IQ?
Well, I can't disagree with you. I've been saying exactly the same thing for 30 years.
Yeah. So it's far worse than just understanding the religion's adverse effects on civilization. And that to understand that Islam is incompatible with morality and justice and prosperity and freedom. That the only hope we have is to eliminate Islam. And until God does it, of course, our voices aren't going to be heard or listened to sufficiently to achieve that goal.
Correct. Yes.
This article... Yeah, this article, by the way, IQ, that I was sharing with you, it says this year has seen a spike in the incidents, according to the report of the nonprofit advocacy group International Concern. It has been estimated that by them and other watchdog groups in the region that there have been over 500 reported cases in the last 2 years of young Christian women being attacked by Muslim men. When you realize they're only 10% of the population, actually 5% of the population because they're women, that number of 5,000 of reported cases, if you were dealing with Muslim women also, you'd have to multiply that by at least 10 and you'd have 5,000 reported cases. And yet they say most of the cases are not reported because the Islamic authorities would imprison the victim of rape. But these girls are often assaulted, they're raped, they're kidnapped, they're forced to change their religion, and they are often killed by Muslim men. Why does the world tolerate this? Why is the United States providing $3 billion of aid to a country that does this?
I have no idea, but we have to explain to our listeners why the Muslims are doing that. We haven't explained that to them.
Please.
Because it is prohibited in Islam for young men and women to have consensual sex. We not talk about adultery, we talk about consensual sex. So the men of Islam, they have to resort to either bestiality, to have sex with animals, and anybody who doesn't believe us can Google this, and you'll find it. And for a rape, and not only rape, as you said, not only raping Christians, Jews, and Buddhists, but raping more of their own women. They have no choice, Yada.
Yeah.
These are young men. They need to get their...
Yeah, wild oats. Yeah.
Yes.
You know, it's interesting.
They have to rape.
You know, it's interesting. Yahweh in his Torah says almost nothing about promiscuity. Almost nothing. You know, he says, I don't want you involved in incest. I don't want you involved in bestiality. I don't want you involved in homosexuality. I don't want you involved in pedophilia. But he says almost nothing about having, you know, expressing one's, consensual sex amongst...
In fact, not almost nothing. There is nothing.
Yeah. And it's because...
The only time God forbids anything is adultery. It's somebody who is married, male or female.
Yeah, and even then...
They are to be stoned to death.
Yeah, it's a little more than that. I mean, the adultery made his top 10 list, and in terms of adultery, it's actually the... habitual practice of adultery, so a single event of adultery isn't the crime. It's the continual practice of adultery that is what he wrote in stone. But the matter of fact is that here you have a religion that not only authorized kidnap and torture and rape, but it's elevated kidnap and torture and rape to the highest expression of that religion.
And of Islam have absolutely no other choice to satisfy their lust.
Yes, and many of the initial raids, and there were 75 terrorist raids that were either authorized by, inspired by, or led by Muhammad in the first 10 years of the Islamic era. There were two motivations for those raids, and only two. One was you get to steal and keep the majority of the property that you confiscate, and the other was that you got to choose which woman you wanted to rape. That's how Islam was spread. Thank you, IQ. We need to continue to hammer on why Islam is so massively savage and brutal to women. Hopefully we can wake up a few people. Thank you, my friend.